Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. I'm Corbin Coyle, and I'm here with
John Ruby.
Ooh, John, did you see that? I took over your job there for a second.
What the heck is going on here? Are we in reversal world? I always do the intro.
I know. It's like exciting to take it over. But today, I wanted to actually do a question in your direction and see how you feel about it. So what is your ideal meal? So if you were going to force me to make you anything, what would it be?
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't want you cooking.
Getting that out.
Second, I want a Michelin star chef. No. If I had to do my ideal meal, I got to say right now, I'm plant-based, man. So everything I'm doing is very, you know, the plant is the main feature of the plate. Yeah. So, you know what, actually what I would really love is just like a veggie wok scramble. I love that.
Maybe yeah, those are good.
You know, you can get like some noodles in there and a bunch of vegetables, a bunch of like broccoli, carrots. I like all that. I generally do like a simple like egg white scramble for myself, but I don't know, for some reason it feels like getting out the wok is a lot more work. Yeah, but I love, for some reason, I don't know, that's like a really tasty.
Why is that the case? It's the same thing. It's just another pan it's a little bigger, I guess, but it makes the food
better.
I have
no idea. And they're super easy to clean. They're even easier to clean.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's because it's way in the back of the cupboard. So yes. I gotta like get through stuff, you know, and, like waffle maker, you gotta move to the side, all these things. And everything shifted underneath there for our stuff. And we have kind of a smallish kitchen. And I'm just like getting angry when I'm getting under, like stuff's falling. And I'm like, I'm just so frustrated.
What am I doing?
I'm like, why can't I get to, you know? So I think it's the challenge of it. But yeah, so a veggie stir fry, man. That sounds like amazing. That.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's actually, it's also somewhat healthy and somewhat not healthy because of the stir fry. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for dessert, cake and ice cream.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. For me, it would be something, I love like ribs and mac and cheese. Like I think it would, I would do something like that, like, you know, slow cooked all day and just like kind of throw
right.
it. Yeah. That always, cause I don't make that often, you know, cause you have to do that for a large group of people. But it is.
I love it. And not a green near that plate.
That's awesome. I did the opposite. I did the opposite.
Nothing even like green, just like bright orange and bright, you know, bright. I love that.
I'll do Brussels sprouts, but I'll put some bacon in there. I don't want to be too green.
Get some
bacon
on there. Get maple syrup on there.
Yeah, I don't want to be
too green. Deep fry it.
That's good. And then, of course, the dessert. I'm with you on the cake and the chocolate. Yeah, obviously.
No, but I used to be a big barbecuer, so I can appreciate that too.
You've made me some pretty good barbecue. You made like a chicken thing. I'm actually not that good at barbecue. I'm good at like slow cooking stuff. So,
I just got a book actually. It's called VBA, which is vegan barbecue. Yeah, exactly. It's brand new. And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And then the writers are from Germany. I'm like, what's going on here?
Something's wrong.
This is really interesting. So, but I'm excited to try some of the recipes. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Well, I'm excited to transfer over to our guest. I'm very excited to have her on the show. She is an actress, a podcast hostess, and a content creator. I want to welcome Anna K. Gold to the show. Hey, Anna.
Hi, everybody. How are you guys today?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good, good.
Pretty good, thanks. I'm drinking out of a vintage glass I'm at my grandma's house. Look, it has like ladybugs on it.
Oh,
it
that's
says
so
love
cute.
Bug.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
That reminds me, Anna, I don't know, like I'm of a certain age where I remember back in the day, like from Burger King and McDonald's, you could get like glass with stuff on. Do you remember this? Like they like you'd get that like when you ordered stuff and there was different like brands and stuff on those were like collector's items, you know.
Awesome. Actually, yeah, from McDonald's, my cousin Joey got to go to McDonald's and I never did, and I was always so jealous because he had those glasses and I was like, man, mom, why won't you take me to McDonald's? And he had the whole collection, but I think my mom was like, it's fast food and it's dangerous for everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, something like that.
McDonald's had so many great little like things. It's not so much anymore. I mean, just John Quill, does he go get things at McDonald's still, or are they still? I remember back in the day it was like Pokemon stuff, you know.
The very first time I took him there, he got a Happy Meal, and in that Happy Meal was a car from one of the Fast and Furious movies that like the front could like bash other cars.
That's
and ever since that day, he loves McDonald's. Like every time he remembers that toy. And some of the toys have not been as good, but he got an amazing toy, like a race car that he loved. And so it comes up all the time. It's genius because every time we pay, you know, he even said the other day he's seven and we could see the arches. We were going somewhere else and he's like, he goes, why are the arches tempting me?
That's great.
It was so funny. He's in the back of the car. He can't drive. I mean, he's in the car seat. You know? I'm like, how are you getting to, like, I'm the one driving. Anyways, was,
oh, how old is your son?
He's seven. He's only seven, but it was
so
funny. That's so funny.
Tempting. That's really funny. Kids say the darndest things.
they really do.
You know, my dad, when I was younger, when I was like four, he used to sneak my brother and I to McDonald's. And my mom was like strictly forbidding it at all times. And maybe once a month, he would tell my mom, hey, Jackie, we're going to go to get gas. And he would take both my brother and I, and we'd always get a Big Mac or something incredibly awesome and have to hide all the evidence and like wipe our mouth really carefully. So I know what it tastes like, and I don't think my mom knows. So I hope she doesn't see this.
We won't share it with her. She'll never know. Well, Anna, I kind of want to pivot a little bit to like kind of your journey and like how you got into acting, because I know you've been to so many like places in the world, and I'm just kind of curious where that started and how you got to where you're at now.
Oh, well, thank you for asking, Corbin. Well, I started out when I was 18, and right after high school graduation, I decided I was going to go green, like into Los Angeles without knowing anything or anyone. And well, I did have an aunt who lived in Orange County. So I stayed with her for a couple of months and moved northward. I rented a house in the Hollywood Hills. A bedroom in a house.
Wow.
I made it really fast. Yeah. You know, it's nice and easy in Hollywood. Everyone gets by. No, I rented a room in the Hollywood Hills house. And then I started doing extra work on different shows, like for the CW and Warner Brothers. I think I worked for Central Casting. And then I got bored with that because it's not really acting. So I started taking improv lessons at Improv Olympic West and Second City on Melrose, but I don't think that's there anymore. And then I was like, so into improv that I went to Chicago. I was like, you can't really do improv in LA. I mean, you can, but I don't know if people take it as seriously. And I was so in love with SNL, and like I'd watched all the Belushi SNLs and, you know, all the classic stuff. So I went to Chicago. I studied improv there, and I studied writing at Second City. And then I think I became bored with that. So I went back out to LA and I did some Spanish TV, an episode of Family Guy. And I don't know if that takes us to right now exactly, but that's like, that was probably a 10-year journey.
Yeah, of course. How was the audition process for the Family Guy? Because voiceover is like a world I don't really know a lot about.
Actually, that was a complete accident. It was, I don't know if the producers want me to tell you this, but it was actually a market research study. And they were looking for people who didn't like Family Guy, like legitimately didn't like Family Guy. And I filled out this form and I'm like, I don't get the humor. It doesn't make any sense to me. And they called me in this room and there were all these like, at the time, I didn't know this. And they said, is it okay if we record you for market research purposes? Huh. And there were all these guys in suits in a room, and they told me, they were like, oh, this is so we can make the show Family Guy better. And instead, they actually used footage of me saying these bad things about Family Guy while I was on Family Guy. And I had no clue that they were going to air it, that I was going to be on TV. In fact, I got a phone call from two different cousins, and they were like, hey, did you know that you're on TV right now? And I'm like, where? Oh, you're on Family Guy. And I was like, are you kidding me? So it wasn't even a voiceover job. It was like the 100th episode. And there's a bunch of people on it who really were market research participants. And I'm like, oh, I got like an acting break from just doing something random. That's cool. I'll keep going with this. So
that's awesome. Yeah. It's always just so random like that. Like you can't.
Yeah. I'm glad when things like that happen more naturally. And, you know, I mean, of course we have to try hard too, but just, it was like one of a kind. I'm like, oh, that's neat. Yeah,
that's awesome. And I'm just curious, cause you said you did improv. What do you feel like you learned from improv? Cause I think it's a great, wonderful thing. I used to do IOS. I'm just curious when you mentioned that, what do you think you pulled from doing the classes in LA and Chicago and stuff?
Oh, that's neat that you took IOS too. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I learned to take a breath and kind of to roll with the punches. I actually feel like I learned more about life than I did about I mean, I did learn a lot from being on stage, but I felt like I learned how to handle people better and how to talk to people better. I'm like, if I just yes and every situation, my life's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like I implemented the skills into my actual life, just like thinking on the fly, not being so nervous, different things like that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you have to kind of give up some control. And I think a lot of times we want to be able to control everything, everything we're saying, the other person, you know, all the elements. And with improv, you can't. You have to kind of let that go.
You really can't. No, it helped. Actually, I can tell you that it helped with auditions, because before the auditions, I'm like, I don't have to be nervous. I can improvise. So that helps with regular scripted auditions a lot, actually. Yeah.
When it comes to being on set, do you like find that improv has, I don't know, saved you, for lack of a better term, if you are feeling like a little like outside of your comfort zone or if you don't have something as memorized as you'd like, or, you know?
Oh, yes, it definitely does. I feel like it gave me a lot more confidence in my creative ability. Like, I'm like, okay, if I don't remember this exactly right, at least I know what I'm trying to say. And so if you get the gist of the words, you know, mm-hmm. they might not be in the same order, but at least you're conveying the same idea, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
For sure.
Yeah, it does help.
Yeah.
My very first SAG commercial I got because of my improv ability. I was improvising a bunch of kind of buttons at the end of the callback, and that's what got the producer and director's attention, for sure, you know. And sometimes there's opportunities for that and sometimes there's not, but I think it's definitely a talent and skill that actors want to have, you know, not even in their back pocket, in their front pocket. Mm-hmm. So I think an improv class or two to be familiar with that is wonderful. Yeah.
I agree. That's awesome that you got it from knowing improv. And can you remind me what a button is? I don't know why, but I kind of forgot.
Sure. So a lot of, yeah, that's great. No, it's a great question. So a button a lot of times is at the end of like, especially commercial auditions, not as much TV and film, but at the end, let's say you've got some dialogue where you're like, hey, I need a new cell phone. And they're like, well, we've got them here. And you're like, I'll take the iPhone 9. And they're like, great. That's the end of the dialogue. And then the button would be, if it came back to you as the customer and you're like, and I also need some almond milk. And they're like, we don't have that here, right? So the joke is, it's a little button to add some comedy that mm-hmm. makes sense in the scene. And it's a great thing, because here's why I recommend it, Anna. And it's a great question. Mm-hmm. Because I've ran a lot of commercial sessions, what happens is, casting sessions, the producers and directors have seen that four sentence scene a zillion times. And they're like going a little brain dead. We're all going brain dead. So when they have someone that can bring kind of a new element to it, it's not the only thing, but it gives it a little bit of life again. And sometimes they'll even use that line in the spot.
Oh, awesome.
Right. But so the point is, it's great to have that at your disposal. And sometimes they'll say, we don't need a button, just let the scene, you know, let it do so. But it's nice to have. And it's one way to kind of show how creative you are. Now, the other thing, Anna, that's interesting is sometimes with certain scenes, there's like an obvious button. You know what I mean? And everybody does it. And you don't want to do an obvious button, because if I'm running a casting, I'm like, I've seen that 20 times. Do not make this joke. You know what I mean? Do not make this joke. So you have to be kind of creative without being too jokey. It's kind of a science.
But,
it's a very interesting thing, especially for commercial auditions. I feel like improv really helps, because you know, you think of different options in that world creatively.
It does make it a lot easier when they're like, do it a totally different way. You're like, I know how I can do this. You're right. Yeah.
John, do you ever tend to, and I guess Anna as well, like when it comes to buttons, do you plan it ahead of time? Or do you, obviously there's still some like on the spot improvising, but do you try to have a button or two in your back pocket that you know are funny jokes before when you get the
100%. Yeah. I tell everyone, like if I'm teaching, I'm like, get the copy, print it out, write a bunch of buttons on it, pick your favorite and have those ready. And then see what, because a lot of times, especially for commercial auditions, people are like, I'm just going to wing it, which is fine. Especially if you've been doing it a long time, it's okay. But for people newer to it, it's like, it's not cheating to like say, okay, this would be really funny. This would be really good. You know, let's see if this works, you know what I mean? And so you can write those down and then you've got them, Corbin, if you need them, mm-hmm. you know, you've got extras. And so something could come up in the moment, but you've also got a couple, you know, that are ready if you need them.
Some tested work.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Awesome.
So Anna, pivoting a little, but when it comes to like Chicago and LA and all the things, like what are the differences that you see across the different places that you've lived and like working and doing acting?
Well, I feel like Chicago is a lot nicer in terms of the, how people treat each other. I just felt like there was more camaraderie and maybe people respect each other's talent more and give each other more space to breathe and think and learn and grow as actors. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just felt more of a sense of community there. I think like people in Los Angeles are really, really friendly. The average person, I always thought my neighbors were friendly and nice people. And but I felt like the scene in Chicago seems to be more helpful and not as competitive. Like it just always felt like other people wanted you to grow, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense. I guess that's kind of a little bit what I'm imagining as well. Like, yeah, everybody in LA I know is like very nice, but there's a little bit of a competitive edge. And in Chicago, people are like, oh, you got onto Chicago Fire. That's awesome. Like, you know, like people are excited about all the circuits that you can get into.
Yeah, it's really nice like that. And I don't think people have to be competitive because everyone's different. So I couldn't compete with a blonde lady or, you know what I mean? I'm different. And so I feel like we should use our strengths, but I feel like I'm also preaching to the choir. So you guys know that.
I have a little philosophy on this, which is I think in areas where people can be anonymous, you get a little more competitive and meanness. If people can be And so what I mean is like, because I was thinking about that with driving in LA and like, you know, someone, this was a month ago or a year ago, a couple years ago, they like, you know, honked and they pulled up beside me and they're all pissed off and they drove off. And I have no idea who that person is. And it was like the street right near my house. I'll never probably see them again, right? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people live around here. But yeah. I feel like in smaller places, they did that. I look over, I'd be like, Kevin, why are you honking at me, Kevin? You know what I mean? And Kevin be like, oh, sorry about that, because you know that person. And yeah. I think there's something about, because in LA, I mean, you know, this is just one theory, because LA, it's so big and there's so many people, kind of like you're saying, there's almost like, there's a little bit of allowed to be kind of anonymous and a little more competitive, and I don't know you, so I don't have to root for you.
Oh.
And I think I've found, at least like in Chicago, even in New York, where it's a smaller pool, you're going to run into those people again and again. And so if you're kind of a jerk, it's like people are going to know right away, you know? And does that make sense? I think that's part
of it. That does. And actually, that's really helpful, John, because sometimes that competitiveness bothers me. I'm like, why? It's not necessary. But now from a logical perspective, it makes more sense. Like, all right, so it's because they don't think they're going to get caught or they don't think they're going to see you again or yeah.
One of my best buddies, this guy, Damien, I used to see at auditions all the time. We didn't know each other. And then we started chatting and we cracked each other up. And now we're good friends. You know, we had the same agent at the time. And that was, you know, 15 years ago. But like, we just didn't know each other. But once you get to know each other, like, hey, we both like comedy. We both like improv. We're both getting in for these commercials, you know? So sometimes it's just kind of like that extended step versus being anonymous. I think that's an interesting part of it.
Oh, that's true. That's helpful. I'm going to remember that if I'm in LA and someone honks at me, I'll be like, what's your name, buddy?
It's Kevin.
Well, forget you, Kevin.
Mad at you. That's awesome. And then I kind of want to talk a little bit about your podcast journey. I know you have your own podcast. Do you want to tell everybody what the name of it is and what your goal is with your podcast?
Sure. My podcast is called The Golden Hour with Anna Gold, and I interview folks in the entertainment industry because I want to show people that the entertainment industry is great. It's actually a lot of fun, and I kind of want to give an insider's glimpse of what the journey is like. Like, what does it take to get where you got to be a director or where you got to be a film, you know, a writer? So I interview people all across the board, but the idea came to me because a lot of people where I have grown up just think show business is bad and they don't quite get why someone would go into entertainment. And I kind of got the idea like, well, it's actually quite great and there's so much fun and there's so much joy in it if you let there be. So that's why I was like, how can I show people this? Okay, I'll interview hopeful guest or people who like what they're doing, nice people, people I know, friends of friends, you know, and it just kind of grew from there. That's my vision with it anyway.
That's awesome. Yeah. How was that first episode? Because like for us, it was very nerve-wracking and we were just like, I don't know, let's try our best.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, my first episode, actually, I was living on Catalina Island and it was during COVID. And I had, there's a radio station there and one of my friends was a DJ and I just asked like, could I be a part of the KISL family too? And it's COVID, no one's doing anything. So they agreed to let me have a radio show. And the first interview was a call in. So someone had to call on the, like, the landline from the radio to the radio station. It was one of my friends, Maggie Avila, who's an actress and she's great. And I was less nervous because it was Maggie and I know Maggie, but I was so nervous because of the switchboard. And I was like, there's nobody in the radio station helping me. I hope I press the recording button right. You know, I hope it saves to the computer. I hope the sound levels are right. I don't know. I was just guessing and it turned out fine. And you can always edit it in post, as they say.
That's so stressful. Yeah, I even am afraid of not recording something to this day. And it's something very simplism. It's not a soundboard that I don't know anything about.
It's reasonable to be nervous and like you're learning as you go, right? We all are.
I was just flashing to Anna, the first short film that I wrote and acted in and produced. I remember doing a scene and like when you're doing a scene and like what you're doing is you're doing an interview, but your mind is on like the technical stuff. And I remember in that short film, like I heard a plane going overhead and I'm like, is sound picking that up? And I'm like, is lunch going to get here? And like, are we going over budget? So I'm trying to do this acting scene. So I'm trying to do that, you know, like the podcast interview, but all the technical stuff is also in there. And the other person kind of has no clue, you know what I mean? They're kind of like, hey, you know, and I think that's such a stressful position to be in, you know, but sometimes that's where we start, you know, that's where we first cut our teeth.
Yeah, it is. And it's fun while you're doing it, while you're learning it. And I do think I actually messed one interview up. Like I pressed the record button too late. I had a guest in the KISL studio and I was so interested in talking to him. I just started the interview and I think I pressed the record button like halfway through the interview and saved about half of what we said. So, you know, it's like all learning and growing, but I'm glad to have it. I'm proud of it, but also like, I'm excited about my guest. I'm glad for who I get to have on next. And yeah. That's good. Thank you.
When it comes
I
to...
Helped, oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, I helped a buddy on a documentary about the lost city of Atlantis. And I was kind of directing / sound guy because we had a tiny crew and he was hosting it. And then we had a camera guy. And we were about halfway through the day and I looked down and the camera guy's like, we're on take, you know, 22. And I looked down and I'm like, I'm on take 21. And I'm like, oh God, somehow the sound is off here.
That's then, awesome.
And then I was like, do I tell Jack now or at the end of the day? I was like, I'll wait till the end of the day. So
pretty much.
Jack was like, do you know where the sound is for this one take? I'm like, I don't know, Jack. Sorry about
that. Did you just hit record twice? Did you just kind of like,
I can't remember what I, something happened. You know, it wasn't the simplest recording device. You had to kind of do a couple things. And so I think somehow I just either double clicked it or something. But he got great. We did get amazing footage from the day.
Oh.
But that one take, there was no sound. He was not going to find the sound for that.
It's lost somewhere. It'll be dubbed. You can fix it in post. I feel like that's always what people say. I feel like when they're not in the industry, I'm like, well, it's actually kind of hard to fix it in post. So I don't know.
Yeah. There's a whole post team that has to do like a million and one things.
Yes. Yeah. And that costs money.
And I'll tell you something. And films always run out of money after production. They never have money for post-production. That's all. And post-production costs like the most money because you can't get favors usually. And so they're like, we spent all our money on pre-production and filming. And they're like, and now you need more money.
Yeah. And how, like, you guys are both filmmakers, right? Yourselves?
We try to be, but yeah.
That's really cool. I'm asking you a question. I was going to ask,
fine.
Like, yeah. I'm the podcast host as a kid. I'm like, I'm reverting back into it. I can't help it. I was going to say, like, how does a filmmaker raise money if they run out of money? I've never like heard of it happening, but is it possible?
100%. Happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You just have to go to people you know. You got to go. You got to find a way. You got to put in more of your own money. You got to do a Kickstarter. Yeah, that happens all. And actually, a lot of projects don't get finished. They mm-hmm. just don't get finished. They don't have enough. They just run out of money, and you never see the project never appears, or it gets done kind of on the cheap, you know.
That's good to know that you can raise money afterwards. I always wondered what happened to projects like that.
Yeah. I mean, you just basically do the same thing again that you did, you know, a year prior. Just it's much more stressful and happening all over again.
Well, the one nice thing about after you shot it that can help is you have footage sometimes.
That's true.
Yeah. So you can put
a little sizzle reel together and say, hey, look, we got this cool shot of the horses and this and the river. And they're like, oh, that's exciting versus the conceptual idea. So that is one kind of positive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so then you're like, look what was done with the first money that was invested. Mm-hmm. And okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that can be helpful.
Nice.
How was living on, you said Catalina Island, right? So like what was that like? Yeah, when it came to like creative work and like meeting people and doing all that.
Oh my gosh, it was beautiful. And the people there are so nice. But it was the weirdest timing that you could possibly think of in the whole world. Ask me when I moved there.
Probably. I think
March 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. Just... It was March 2nd, 2020. Yeah. And I had a job there. I had a place to live. I was so excited. And I was planning on taking the ferry to and from LA to go to auditions. I had this whole life plan set up. And then 2 weeks later, everything shut down and the ferries stopped running. So I was like on the island without a way to get off the island unless I knew someone with the boat, but I didn't. Wow. So I had a dream in March of 2020. I dreamt that one of the guys from the village I was in led us all up in the hills and he helped us to find food and forage for food. And then I was like, wait a minute, like, are there things you can eat on the island? And there are so many things you can eat on the island, like Catalina lemonade berries and rosemary. There's just a ton of stuff, cherries. And so I started researching it and then I started making a show called What's This about all the plants you can eat and medicinal plants on the island. So I was just like, oh, cool. My dream turned into something real.
That's awesome. I can't believe it makes sense that they shut down the ferry or the boat, but makes me very uncomfortable immediately hearing that.
It was very scary. I was like, I think my first concern was food probably. Mm-hmm. And then, but they were still bringing groceries over on the barge. So, you know, we got to eat something normal, which was nice.
That's good.
But it was a good couple of months to get to know people in the community because I felt like it was so rural where I was staying and there were no cases of COVID. So we all got to know each other. And it was like from March to May of 2020, the village is called Two Harbors. And I think there are like 50 people that live there. Oh, wow. So we were all just stuck together, hiking together, drinking together. I don't know. It was actually kind of fun in its own way. We were very isolated, but doing the best we could, you know, and we didn't run out of toilet paper.
Oh, yeah. Like the rest of the world, we did. We're still looking for toilet paper to this day.
It was like a mini New Zealand. Did you have a female prime minister and everything? It was like a mini New Zealand. Yeah.
We did. And she was pregnant when she took office. And it was actually the mayor of that little town was a female. So that's interesting that you said that. Teresa was her name. She was a nice lady, always fighting for people and fighting for the community and the island. And she was cool.
I'm always curious to hear about, I love hearing that, other places. Now, did you live in Montana for a bit? Did you like work there as an actor at all? Or, you know, kind of were you there or what were you doing in Montana? Because it's always interesting to hear about different geography places of you know, in the creative arts.
Oh, yeah. I was in Montana, kind of led there on a whim by a friend who I met in Chicago. And she's like, oh, you're feeling sick of Chicago. Why don't you come to Montana? Come back with me. And it was right when she was graduating college. So she was going to move back anyway. And she's like, well, I hope you make your decision. I'm going to knock on your door in 2 weeks on September 1st. And if you want to come with me, you better have a suitcase packed because we're driving there. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Like, why would I move to Montana? But it was like the perfect decision. It was I couldn't have made a better decision at that time in my life. Like, you know, when you feel like you need to be refreshed and things might have gone stale in a certain area and you're just like, okay, how can I pick the pieces back up again and start creating again for myself? And it turned out to be a really good opportunity because I was cast in a movie within about 1 month of being there. And I think Shannon was my friend who like took me with her to Montana. Shannon's mom knew a casting director and the casting director got me on audition. And it, I don't know, just turned out to be a wonderful experience. And I was in a movie called Bushwhacked. And it was really fun. I played a mom and her son's like doing bad things and she has to kick him out. And so that it was a good film. Like the cinematography is great. Montana has the best landscape to film. Like the landscape itself alone will tell a story, you know?
That's amazing. Yeah, I love, I've never been to Montana, but it does seem like a beautiful place to kind of go and just, you know, regather your thoughts, for lack of a better phrase.
It really is. And strangely enough, like, don't tell people that you're from California if you go there, because I think that certain Californians have raised the cost of real estate and it's kind of like they're overbidding for houses. So if you say like you're from somewhere else, it might be better when you meet the average person. Just, maybe you should be from Maryland in this case. Like I thought you were.
That's amazing. Anna, I feel like we could just talk all day. So you have so many, you've been to so many places, you've done so many things. Like it's so interesting to hear like all the locations you've been and all the work you're doing and your positive energy. It's very unheard of. But I think it's what do you think, Johnny? I think it's about time to switch over to our favorite segment.
Yep.
Your best bad acting.
Oh yeah.
Here it is. So I'm gonna send a quote in the chat. And you're going to just kind of give it your best read. You can have fun with it. You can do whatever you want. There's no right or wrong answer. Just have as fun. You can be as strange, perfect, normal, whatever you want. Like you can just kind of go for it. And whenever you're ready, you can kind of, and we may give you a few redirects.
Okay, hold on. I have to get into character.
Sure. Go for it.
Say hello to my little friend. His name is Pedro. He lives in the bushes. You like Pedro?
That's so great. I didn't know what to expect, and I love it.
Thank you.
Amazing. That's funny because my redirect was going to be add some improv, which you already naturally did. So I love
amazing.
That.
Thank you.
Really, really, really good. Can we do it again? And can you give it I was thinking, what's the Catalina Island version of this?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, okay. Okay. Say hello to my little friend. His name is John. He has an Airbnb here, and he's raising rental prices because apparently it wasn't hard enough to find a place to live on the island as it is. Jeez, John.
God, John. Are there any good Johns in this world?
No, they're not. We are in Montana and Catalina, and we're raising the prices. Which is funny to me because people want their values to go up. So don't you want your values to go up? Yeah. But they don't want to be priced out, yeah, which I also get.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's a fine line. And I didn't mean to insult anybody. I'm only relaying the information that's there.
No, that was amazing. I have a
thank you.
I have a weird redirect because I've been interested in animal work lately. So I want you to do it like a Catalina bison. So whatever that means to you, just that can mean a million and one things.
Okay. Say hello to my little friend.
Yeah. This is good.
He will not be my friend for long because I will stomp him.
That was amazing.
Thank you. Guys, this has been fun. I wish we could talk longer, like at least another hour.
We could easily do it. Yeah, this was so great.
This was great, Annie. What a journey you've been on. We love hearing about it. It's so exciting, you know. It's pretty neat that you're willing to like take chances and go for it and learn and grow. That's really special. It's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you for encouraging me like that. That's awesome, John.
Yeah.
It takes courage. It really does. I think people forget that. It's easy to stay complacent and kind of stay in your own little bubble. And it sounds like there's times where you're like, I got to bust out of this bubble. And that's wonderful. You know, it's really wonderful. So.
Thank you. I feel like I always go with where my inspiration is. I'm like, all right, what am I inspired to do next?
For sure. That's good. Not a lot of people have that. Like, you just following your instinct.
I think that's what it is. Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll let you get on with your day, but we appreciate everything you brought to this podcast interview.
Thank you. High five.
High five. Here we go. Thanks, Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Life Podcast.